So Andrew isn't the only dinosaur in the audience, and to make things even worse, I'm going to use this antiquated pointer. Okay, just a brief outline of what I'm going to cover. The title that's advertised is sort of polarization in jets, but essentially it's going to be sort of a review of the parsec scale jets in active galactic nuclei with kind of a focus on the polarization as a key piece of information that's going to let us bring things together for our understanding of these jets. Okay, and the main topics I'm going to be covering are the magnetic field structures that we seem to see, in particular evidence for toroidal or maybe helical magnetic fields in the jets, the information about superluminal speeds that are observed in various types of AGN, information about the core rotation measures, which is basically telling you about the Faraday rotation happening in the core region, so the density of free electrons, and last, some information about circular polarization measurements on parsec scales. Now, it's been known there's been good evidence for a long time that different types of active galactic nuclei show different characteristic magnetic field structures on parsec scales. And roughly speaking, what we would call quasars or AGN, radio loud AGN with strong optical lines, tend to have inferred magnetic fields that are roughly longitudinal along the direction of the jet, whereas BLAC objects, which are radio loud AGN with weak optical lines, seem to have a tendency to have magnetic fields perpendicular to the direction of the flow. Okay, it's not 100% correlation, but there's a distinct tendency in both cases. And this is one example. It's 3C120. It shows kind of what are shown here are the observed polarization vectors plus 90 degrees. And I write it like that rather than just being sort of blithe and writing B for magnetic field, because although in theory the observed polarization should be perpendicular to the underlying magnetic field, if the emission region is optically thin, there can be aberration effects that will make this not quite true. And so on average, I think what we are observing is actually a relationship where the underlying magnetic field is nearly perpendicular to the observed polarization in optically thin regions. But there, I write things this way to just explicitly make it clear that we have to be a little bit cautious about doing that. So here we've got a one-sided core jet structure. The one-sided nature is believed to be due to Doppler beaming. So in other words, this is the approaching jet. The receding jet on the other side is beamed away from us, and so we don't detect it. And the sticks here are showing you the inferred kind of direction of the magnetic field, and you can see it's aligned with the jet. Okay. Now, one thing I want to point out here, there's been a little bit of controversy lately in the literature about whether or not this tendency that I indicated earlier about strong line and weak line AGN is actually true. And this kind of shows you one example how you could easily be fooled into thinking it might not be true. For example, here, this is a 1 centimeter map. The inferred field looks quite aligned up here, but when you get out to this knot, it looks like it just kind of goes bananas and winds up being oblique. God knows what direction it's in. However, once you get information from a slightly lower frequency map, 2 centimeter map, you see that in fact, the inferred magnetic field here seems to be nearly pointing along the direction further down the jet. Okay. So there's recent evidence sort of suggesting that this tendency for quasars to have longitudinal fields and for BLAC objects to have perpendicular fields was not really there. And then other evidence came in later suggesting that in fact it was. And so I'm going to sort of be assuming for the rest of the talk that in fact that's the case. And this shows you a nice example of an object which has what we would call sort of an inferred perpendicular transverse magnetic field geometry. And here are shown the electric polarization vectors. And so if you think of the magnetic field as being kind of perpendicular to that, to those vectors, you see that it's basically a sort of a perpendicular orthogonal magnetic field configuration all along the jet, even as the jet bends quite severely. And here's another example. Here, these vectors are the electric vector plus electric polarization vector plus 90 degrees. And again, you've got this space VLBI observation at 6 centimeters, so it has higher resolution than most observations of this wavelength. The jet sort of bends up and down, and you can see this nice swing in the inferred magnetic field direction, so that the magnetic field remains transverse all along the jet. And as the jet sort of extends outwards quite far from the core, that tendency is maintained. Okay, and it's quite natural, I think, at this point to interpret this in terms of these transverse magnetic fields being associated with the toroidal component of a helical magnetic field that's associated with the jet, which you could obtain in quite a natural way, as we've been talking about, due to a combination of rotation of a central accretion disk and the outflow along these jets. Now, if that is the case, if we are actually observing the toroidal component of a helical magnetic field, it was pointed out by, I think, first by Roger Blanford a few years ago, that we might expect to see gradients in the Faraday rotation across these jet structures. Okay? And the basic idea behind this is, if you imagine, for simplicity, just to sort of understand the phenomena, looking at a jet with a helical magnetic field straight from the side, okay, you'd have the direction of the magnetic field sort of coming out at you on one side, coming up perpendicular to the line of sight on the other, and going away from you on the other side, as is drawn here. Okay, and the observed Faraday rotation will depend on the dot product between the magnetic field and the line of sight, which means that we would expect to observe different Faraday rotations, roughly speaking, on one side of the jet, in the middle, and on the other side, even if the electron, free electron density were the same in all those locations. Okay, and so one diagnostic for looking for helical magnetic fields or toroidal magnetic field component associated with these jets may be to look for these rotation measure gradients. And there's potentially a lot of diagnostic information that could be contained in these gradients. For example, the amplitude of the gradient, the magnitude of the gradient, will depend on the pitch angle. The higher the pitch angle, the more severe this phenomenon should be. And the profile of the rotation measure gradient across the jet will also depend on the viewing angle. Okay, and something to keep in mind here as well is that a viewing angle of 90 degrees, in other words, sort of side on in the source frame, will be equivalent to a viewing angle of about 1 over gamma, where gamma is the Lorentz factor in the observer's frame. Okay, so in a case where you really are looking sort of side on in the source frame, you should get a nice symmetrical profile with negative rotation measures on one side, positive on the other, and zero in the middle. And as you sort of go off axis from there, the whole pattern shifts. So you would still expect to get a gradient, but it won't be symmetrical. Okay, now the first claim of having detected such a gradient was made by Asada et al. In a letter to the publications of the Astronomical Society of Japan. This was data for VLBA, data for 3C273, a famous quasar obtained from the archive. Okay, the top map shows the contours of total intensity and the polarization. It's observed, actually. I won't swear to that. I don't remember if that's polarization or polarization minus 90 degrees, but don't worry about it. The key thing here is this, the color here shows the distribution of the rotation measure. Okay, and the claim was that this showed a sort of a gradient. They have kind of a funny color scheme here, which is why it doesn't look very smooth, but that there was a gradient across the jet. And they interpret this as evidence for a helical magnetic field associated with this source. Now, since then, a couple of students at University College Cork and myself have tried to follow this up with some data that we already had in hand for a sample of BLAC objects. And we got some what I think are quite impressive results. They've been published in the monthly notices of the Royal Astronomical Society in a 2004 letter. Here's one example that shows precisely this sort of characteristic behavior that I was referring to if we're observing at nearly 90 degrees to the jet axis in the source frame. And one thing that we did, which was not done in the case of Asada et al., is that we subtracted the contribution, the overall contribution to the observed Faraday rotation due to free electrons in our own galaxy. So what we should be looking at here is in free electrons that are in the vicinity of the source. And in the middle of the jet, we've got something reasonably close to zero. Somewhere in here, we do actually have zero. On the one side, we've got positive, and on the other side, we've got negative. And we have several examples of this. I just don't have time to sort of go through them all. But this is the one reason I decided to show this particular example, is that these data that I just showed were based on data that were not really taken initially for fairy rotation studies, just three wavelengths at 2, 4, and 6 centimeters. But I mean, even with three wavelengths, you can tell if something fits a straight line or not. It's consistent with that, and we do expect a linear relationship between the observed polarization angle and the square of the wavelength. We're looking at Faraday rotation. Okay, this is the same source, a different epoch, but data in this case at 4, 6, 13, and 18 centimeters. Okay, so we're looking at lower wavelengths, which means shorter wavelengths, which means that we're able to trace things further out from the center of activity. And we've got the same sort of gradient in the rotation measure across the jet over quite an extended region of the jet here. And if you look, I sort of made not very high-tech little green dots where the dots are so you could actually see them. But you can see that particularly on this side, but in fact in all places, we get a pretty decent fit to the lambda squared behavior expected for a rotation measure. And this is just one other example, which I think is particularly impressive because it extends over such a long stretch of jet, a very nice sort of uniform gradient in the rotation measure from the south to the north side of the jet. And the distance here that we're talking about amounts to something like 10 parsecs in the source frame. So it's a very extended structure. In this particular example, we don't actually go through zero. This would be a case where we're viewing the source slightly off perpendicular to the jet in the source frame. So I think that's a key piece of information that's starting to come in about what's really going on with these jets and their magnetic field structures. And some sort of interesting information that seems to tie into this is that if these jets do have helical magnetic fields, we would expect for some combinations of viewing angle and pitch angle and so forth to see a dominant perpendicular magnetic field component in the middle of the jet along the spine, and having the longitudinal component show up at the edges of the jet. And we have seen several very nice examples of this. This is one. These are, again, the observed electric vectors plus 90 degrees, so pseudo B field. In the central part of the jet here, right along the spine, we see the sort of inferred magnetic field nice and perpendicular to the jet direction and kind of rotating as the jet rotates. And then once we go beyond this bend, the predominant magnetic field seems to become longitudinal and shift towards the edge of the jet. This is another example that's quite nice because you can actually see both components. You see the sort of central spine. These are E vectors, so magnetic field is perpendicular to this, roughly speaking. A central region of transverse magnetic field and two flanked by two regions of longitudinal field. And again, in this case, we've got the lower frequency observations as well. And here's what the resulting polarization map looks like after correction for the local Faraday rotation, which is quite important at these longer wavelengths. And again, you see this nice sort of spine and sheath structure, but extending quite a bit further from the center. Another very nice example of this sort of spine and sheath structure, which is in an object that shows properties sort of intermediate between a BLAC object and a quasar, 1055 plus 018, was originally, this spine sheath structure was originally observed by Attridge et al. In 1999. These are more recent data kind of confirming that observation. And here you've got sort of a central spine here along the main part of the jet, the brightest part of the jet here, in which you've got a perpendicular magnetic field that again kind of rotates with the jet as the jet turns. And out here is this region of sort of sheath, what we'd call a sheath magnetic field along the jet. So this is 5 gigahertz and 1.6 gigahertz maps, both showing this spine sheath structure. And another intriguing thing that these particular observations revealed was a suggestion of polarization in between these two bright knots here, which seems to indicate a magnetic field perpendicular to the jet direction. And this I would also view as sort of circumstantial evidence in support of this idea that we're seeing a magnetic field component associated with a toroidal magnetic field component. The idea that we've got a transverse magnetic field in between regions of bright knots. Okay, and another piece of information that has come in that I think indicates that we're seeing what I would think of as kind of global magnetic field structures rather than just magnetic field structures due to a series of local phenomena, is that we've got a couple of examples now where we see a fairly rapid alternation of magnetic field structures or geometries from perpendicular to aligned to perpendicular, aligned, perpendicular, going out along the jet. And I mean, it's possible to interpret these in terms of a longitudinal field, basically with shocks superimposed or something like this. But it seems to me that what we might be seeing here also is some sort of overall mode, looking at the jet as an overall electromagnetic structure, an overall mode that is having an alternation of which is the dominant field component. Okay, now what I'd like to do is try to kind of tie in with this other information, systematic information we have about these jet structures. And one thing that we can try to tie in is statistics about the actual apparent superluminal speeds that are observed in these different types of AGN. Now this is a very busy diagram. I was just too effing lazy to pare it down and make it easier to read, I'm afraid. But the key pictures are just right here. And really, the bottom line key pictures are just here. So you can ignore the rest and just look at these two. And essentially, these are the kind of a histogram showing the superluminal speeds observed for quasars, strong line objects, and BLAC objects, weak line objects. Okay? And the main thing is that you can sort of see as you cast your eyes through these diagrams that there's a tendency for the BLAC objects to be concentrated at the low end. In other words, it's not that the distributions of the two speeds don't overlap at all, but there's a distinct tendency for the observed speeds in the BLAC objects to be a bit lower than in the quasars. And this could have, in general, a couple of different possible origins. It could have to do with characteristic lines of sight, and it can have to do with the intrinsic flow speeds along the jets. But something that sort of occurs to one when you take a look at this piece of information together with the information about the characteristic magnetic field structures is whether the systematic difference in the superluminal speeds for quasars and BLAC objects, if it does actually primarily indicate differences in the intrinsic flow speeds going out, could this actually have implications for the ratio of the azimuthal and longitudinal magnetic field components that we would expect for BLAC objects and quasars? And the idea that if we had in quasars a situation where the outflow speed along the jet was systematically higher than the rotation speed, characteristic rotation speed, compared to the case for BLAC objects, you have a situation where you would have basically lower pitch angles for the helical magnetic fields in quasars, and you might expect to see more of a tendency to see a net poloidal field component than a toroidal field component. And, yes. And just sort of a quick comment to kind of reinforce the idea that these jets are sort of overall structures. They're not just a series of bullets that are being fired out in a certain direction. It's been something that's been known for quite some time, but these are results from a 2-centimeter VLBA survey, monitoring survey, that basically have better time coverage than most previous observations, and clearly show evidence for non-radial motions of objects. In other words, you have situations where a jet seems to curve, and when you can actually trace individual components, they do actually move along the curve. Okay, now another sort of bit of information that can fit into this overall puzzle is the core rotation measures. Okay, this is work done by Greg Taylor, and essentially, don't worry about the scales, but what you want to worry about is just looking. Here's your core, jet, core and jet, core and jet. And you've got different colors in the core and in the jet. You've got yellow cores and blue jets. And basically, with the scale that they've used, that's indicating an enhanced Faraday rotation in the core region, which they've quite reasonably interpreted as an enhanced electron density there, free electron density. And this type of behavior is also seen in the BLAC objects. is another one of our, the sources in our sample. And here again, we've got an enhanced rotation measure in the core region compared to the jet, although it's more modest. It's a more modest enhancement compared to the values seen in quasars. And indeed, when you actually compare the two, okay, here's a histogram of the rotation measures, Verdi rotation, observed in the VLBI cores of quasars, corrected for the galactic Verdi rotation and for the source redshift. Here's the distribution that you get. This would be a log of rotation measure. And here's the distribution that you get for the BLAC objects. So you've got strong line objects with higher core rotation measures than weak line objects. It's another sort of picture in the overall puzzle. Some other very recent work by P.T. Karb et al. Has to do with parsec scale polarization observations for radio galaxies. And there seems to be a tendency for the FR1 radio galaxies to be more polarized, or perhaps we should look at it as less depolarized than the FR2 galaxies. And you can see that qualitatively, just you've got core jet structures, and you can see lots of polarization sticks along the jet. And this is also sort of suggestive that we might have fewer free electrons in the FR1 than in the FR2 sources, which might be consistent with the fact that FR1, that BLX in the standard unification are associated with FR1 rather than FR2 sources. So we've got the situation where we've got lower core rotation measures, less Verdi rotation for BLX objects. This might mean, well, this does indicate fewer free electrons, which would indicate either a lower density of stuff or fewer ionizing photons. And a reasonable question to ask would be whether we could have a lower density of material in BLX, which might lead to a lower accretion rate, which might therefore lead to lower outflow speeds. It's speculative, but it's at least a plausible scenario. Okay, and the last thing that I want to sort of try to start tying into this is some recent circular polarization observations on parsec scales. This is very difficult work because most antenna feeds that are used are not really optimally designed at all for circular polarization studies. The calibration is very difficult. But there are a couple of groups that are working on this now that seem to be getting consistent results, even in terms of comparing results for a particular source. So the circular polarization that has been detected is of the order of a few tenths of a percent. So it's detectable, but it's weak. It is almost always in the core, occasionally in a component in the innermost jet, just barely resolved from the core. And there seems to be evidence for consistency in the sign of the circular polarization over time. And if this is interpreted as being connected with the magnetic field geometry, it would indicate a stability of the magnetic field over time. And I should point out before I forget that the techniques of circular polarization mapping on parsec scales were pioneered by Dan Holman, and his group is one of the few in the world that's now actively trying to do this type of work together with our own. Okay, now theoretically, you can get all sorts of juicy information from observations of the circular polarization. If you can actually get the spectrum, you can get information about whether the origin is intrinsic synchrotron radiation or linear to circular conversion in a thermal or relativistic plasma. You can also get information about the composition of the plasma in theory. Is it hadronic or is it electron positron? And some claims have been made about this in the literature, but about which I think we should be quite cautious, because I think we don't have very much information. Basically, information about the spectrum has never been obtained for more than two frequencies at a time, which means basically you don't know anything. Really, you know something about one little tiny bit of it, and you don't really know what the overall shape is. So there's a lot of potential here, but I don't think that we've actually got a lot of really useful information yet. But what I want to do, the last thing I want to show you, is some results that I think are quite astounding. Okay. This is a 2-centimeter map of the central region of the radio galaxy 3C84 by Dan Holman. Here's the total intensity contours. And these two things here are the map of the circular polarization. Okay, here in his notation, dotted is negative and solid is positive. So this is starting to be good stuff. You've got a jet structure here, and you've got circular polarization from what seems to be coming from several parts of the jet. You've got different signs, for God's sake. And the degree of polarization out here goes up to 3%. I mean, what more could the theorists want, right? Although, I mean, so it's brilliant. It's wonderful new observations, but we don't have a clue what it means. And you might be forgiven if you said, oh, come on, surely that can't be right. He's got to have done something wrong someplace, no matter how clever he is. Except that, oh, it's a shame that the color reproduction is so bad. But except that this is our map. My student Vasily Petrushak made this map using a different technique, different data, different technique. It's also 2 centimeters. And we see the same sort of structure. Blue here is negative, so it corresponds in sign. The sort of red-brown is positive, corresponds in sign. And so this is indicating that there's some fairly astounding results coming out that have been verified by 2 different groups using different techniques. Okay, and this is another example which is even more incredible, I think. Okay, this is the same source, 3C84, at 6 centimeters. And in this case, the circular polarization structure is completely changed. And this is unpublished. These are unpublished results. Unpublished largely because when Dan Homan originally got his map here, he thought, it can't be right, I must have messed up someplace. Okay, here's the core and this complicated jet structure coming out. And here you've got this luscious tongue of negative circular polarization coming out along the jet. Okay? And here's the distribution that Vasily derived. Again, sort of this sort of curvy structure of negative circular polarization with about the same magnitude coming out along the jet. So no, I don't think we really have a clue what this means, other than it's an important piece of the theoretical picture, because clearly circular polarization can be generated in extended regions of these jet structures, not just in very compact components. But I think it's very exciting that some of these results are coming out, and that we're very fortunate to be in a situation where we've got 2 groups who are working, who are able to verify their results. Okay, so to summarize things, I think we've got our first firm and direct observational evidence that we're seeing toroidal, probably helical magnetic fields associated with the jets of AGN, radial out AGN. Okay. And it's a very natural picture to imagine the sort of winding up of a seed field due to rotation plus outflow as being the origin of these fields. Now, if we do have helical fields, presumably the jet should carry current, which is something that hasn't really been taken seriously either observationally, well, certainly observationally. And it's something that we need to think about. How can we actually try to get some observational evidence for whether these jets actually carry current, some effects that might be associated with that? Okay. And it underscores the idea that the jets are fundamentally electromagnetic structures, and we need to start looking at them that way. Okay. The apparent superluminal speeds are systematically lower in BLAC objects, which have weak optical lines, than in quasars, which have strong optical lines. And that might be able to be tied in with this in a very natural way in terms of the pitch angle of the resulting helical field that arises. Okay. And the core Faraday rotations are lower in BLAC objects than in quasars, which again might be able to be tied in with all this. Okay. And in particular, the sort of picture that I think we might be looking at, might be able to start piecing together, is, for example, if we imagine that we have a lower density of matter in BLAC objects, in other words, in FR1 radio sources, this might lead to a lower accretion rate, which might lead to lower outflow speeds, and higher pitch angles for the helical fields that are produced. It's not a scenario that's been proven, but it's at least a scenario that's plausible, and it might help us kind of piece together these disparate pieces of observational information. Okay? And another point here is that it's also plausible that a lower accretion rate might also lead to a lower flux of ionizing photons from the accretion disk, which in some sense might give you a double whammy in terms of the result, the strength of the optical lines that would be observed in these objects. It might be one way to understand why the lines in these BLAC objects are so weak. Okay? And somehow the circular polarization has to be tied into this too. It's very new work, but it's a very natural idea that the sign of the circular polarization should be related to the direction of the winding of the helical magnetic field. And once we start getting enough sources for which we have both circular polarization measurements and rotation measure gradient measurements, we might be able to start looking for correlations there.
Okay.
So the depolarization or the Faraday rotation that you see, how are the electrons? These are a non-relativistic population of electrons, presumably.
Yes.
And they are connected how to the electrons that are emitting the synchrotron emission?
That's something
an extension of the power law.
That is something that's not really known yet, and it's not even known whether they're located sort of within the volume of the jet or whether they're in a cocoon around the jet. And in some sense, in a connection, in a context of trying to use them to derive the magnetic field structure, it doesn't matter. Because even if they're in a sort of a cocoon of more thermal electrons around the jet, they would still be affected by this magnetic field structure. But we don't have enough information about the spectrum to know if they're just kind of the tail end or if they're material that was just lying around the jet and kind of got taken up with it.
My question is sort of a continuation of the previous question. So if you have this internal Faraday rotation, then you can measure the density of this thermal plasma, right? And if it's plasma in the jet, then you can check it against the energy balance in the jet.
If it's internal to the jet.
Yeah, so what kind of densities do you get, and have you carried out all these estimates?
That I don't know yet. I mean, if you're a pessimist, you can say she was a lazy so-and-so. If you're an optimist, you can say she hasn't gotten around to doing this yet because she didn't feel confident that she knew where the electrons were actually located. So you can take your pick. They have to be co-located with the field, but here, this is proof I spent 4.5 years in Moscow. I'm going to use Chuck during the talk. Right, if you've got kind of the jet flow coming out and then you've got a kind of cocoon around it, and you might have the same sort of magnetic field structure through this whole thing, right? And this cocoon could have been kind of entrained from the outside, or it could be just the lower. I mean, it could be electrons that were intrinsically brought out from the central regions, and it's a bit unclear.
Hi, I have a question about the pitch angle in the jet. So, did you say that the pitch angle is larger at the core, but at edge is decreased? Did you say?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
And you also have to be a little bit careful here, just in thinking of the pitch angle of the helical magnetic field associated with the jet. It's not necessarily saying that you have an actual helical jet, right? They're two different things.
Okay.
But I think the evidence that we have is that in the low luminosity objects, the pitch angles of the magnetic fields may be higher, so more toroidal.
Okay, so and do you have any plan to observe a pitch angle distribution inside the jet? So maybe a kind of circular
pitch
correlation
angle
maybe?
Distribution for the particles or for the
no pitch angle in the jet structures at the core or to the limb
there,
of
there
the
are
jet.
Very few there are very few jets in which you can actually see a clear helical pattern and try to get information about the pitch angle.
Okay.
So I have a question about the apparent difference in superluminal speeds between the blazars and the quasars. So as you know, for a fixed velocity, the superluminal motion peaks a finite line of sight
yep.
angle, and then goes back down again to zero as you go to perfectly directed towards you. Could that simply be the explanation for the difference?
That has been suggested as an explanation for this. However, I think that it's extremely implausible because there's no evidence. In that case, you would expect the Doppler factors for the Bialak objects to be higher than the Doppler factors for the quasars. And all the evidence that's available suggests the opposite. Okay, and so that's basically the argument in a nutshell. It's much more consistent with the idea that the actual flow outward is less relativistic.
Thanks.
I have a small question, a bigger question, and just a comment on another suggestion on the circular polarization, which I already mentioned to you. So let me just say that first, it's quick, that several superluminal sources show apparent helical motions of the components.
Yeah.
And if they are interpreted as suggested some years ago by Kronecker and the other guy in Heidelberg, that this is motion along of particles moving along the jet, individual clumps or blobs, then they would be also, just from the shape of those helices, that they would have to be, you would tell which side it's rotating, and
right.
So there would be another independent test on the sense of rotation.
Yeah, that's so right, and if we could possibly find a source like that, together with a source that showed a rotation measure gradient
that
enabled you to determine the direction of the helix.
That would be wonderful. But now, the small question, which is just a clarification, is that you showed, looked something like, you talked about the spine and the core, I mean the spine and the sheet, and it looked like you're inferring that you see clear B phi along the spine, and then towards the edges, whatever B poloidal was showing up. But then from the Faraday rotation maps, maybe they weren't on the same resolution, you showed that the gradients also happened pretty along the spine, and that wasn't clear to me. How could that...
The gradients occur from side to side.
So you weren't really... So you really couldn't... You didn't see a really clear gradient very near the center. You had to go to the edges to actually
see... You had to go to the edges to actually see the gradient in the rotation, that's right.
So the actual question I had was... you showed various patterns here on parsec scales, and I know that in the past people studied all this in large scale jets on the kiloparsecs or even hundreds of kiloparsec scales, and there were also a bunch of patterns of polarization. So how are there any similarities or any
To be honest, it's categorized now into the category of future work. I think there's probably a ton of useful information in the literature, in the archives, for the polarization structures on kiloparsec scales that needs to be reinvestigated in light of these results, because it would be brilliant to actually find these rotation measure gradients, for example, on the kiloparsec scale.
Well, they've been found years ago. I mean, all those classical sources, and Andrew probably would remember, like NGC 6251, there was a work by Perley and collaborators, which...
Rotation measure gradients across the jets.
Oh yes.
Wow,
very
that's
similar.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I mean, that definitely we need to... it's something that I'm too young to be aware of,
make those connections.
I hate to say. But we should go back and look at that, definitely.
No, something completely different. I was very impressed by 3% circular polarization, right?
Yeah, 3%.
And that's only observed at one frequency so far in this object.
It's also been observed at that particular object. I mean, it just shows you how much more complicated the situation is than we thought, because observations are available at four different wavelengths, and they all show the 1 centimeter and 2 centimeter show similar structures with that sort of level of percent, and the 4 and 6 centimeters show completely different. Distributions of, yeah, gosh, is right. And
so
another,
you can't in any sense get a frequency dependence of this percentage.
In this particular case, no. And let me just make a quick comment there in connection with that. This is a radio galaxy. It's quite low redshift, which means we're looking at it with high spatial resolution, right? Now, it'd be very easy to imagine looking at a somewhat more distant Bialik object or quasar and seeing this whole bunch kind of in a nice unresolved core, right? And you get this whole thing sort of smushed together into one little bit, and you'd see, you know, if it's a few percent here and a little bit weaker there, you get the whole thing together, and there's your 0.4%. So, I mean, there may actually be structure and circular polarization in a lot of these objects in which circular polarization has been detected from an unpolarized core.
It's intrinsically synchronous circular.
It does, and for precisely that reason, although it's difficult to prove it, but I think it's more natural to think that this is conversion of linear polarization. I think you can. I mean, it's also intriguing. It may just be a coincidence. It's intriguing that this source is not linear polarized. I mean, it's completely depolarized. Yeah, this is milliarc seconds. Yeah, exactly. So it's about a factor of 100, roughly speaking, better resolution.
In the cases where you see the opposite direction along the sides of the jet, the natural interpretation would be that there's a gradient in velocity across the jet that stretches field lines along the axis. Now that would most naturally fit in if these at the same time were cases where there's evidence of interaction with the surroundings that would cause a velocity shear across near the edges. Is there any kind of correlation that you can see between the environment of the jet and the presence of these longitudinal fields?
There are hints. Let me just, in this particular case, there is an enhancement, a quite appreciable enhancement in the Faraday rotation occurring right near this bend, okay, which is suggestive that the jet initially comes out here, sort of has a bit of a dance with a cloud, and then as part of that, partly as a result of that, it gets sort of deflected a bit, and possibly giving rise to then to this kind of longitudinal poloidal field along that northern edge of the jet. But, and in fact, that's the way these types of structures were first interpreted. But I think it's a very interesting idea that you don't need, in that case, you'd need to have some mechanism that was giving you an azimuthal field along the bulk of the jet, plus an interaction. And in some sense, you get the whole thing for one, if you imagine that there's just a helical field. They're both manifestations of the same field. Because basically, when you're looking at the central part of the jet, you see the azimuthal component. And when you look at the edges, you start to see the longitudinal component getting dominant. So it's difficult to show. It's difficult to show. But I mean, it's definitely useful to try to look for evidence of interaction. Because what you're saying is certainly true. It's a plausible explanation.
Coming from the gamma ray burst field, I see that when in gamma ray bursts we talk about polarization, we usually tend to consider integration over different Doppler factors due to that you may not have like a single blob going out, but you have like different.
The jets may actually, I mean, there are individual knots, but the jets are continuous as well.
And the effect is sometimes that the polarization angle is completely rotated by these kinematical effects. Is something that may be relevant here? It looks like here you sort of assume that there's one gamma and one theta only in the modeling.
It depends. To a certain extent, you're right. You do see these cases where you seem to have fairly abrupt changes in the dominant magnetic field mode along the jet. And what we're suggesting, I mean, that may not be, I mean, it could be due, okay, in this sort of model of a helical magnetic field. In fact, you can imagine that this could come about if the jet was sort of slowing down a little bit, got re-accelerated. And because of the changing Doppler factor, the dominant field component that is observed in the observer's frame could actually change. Okay, so it's hard to say. I mean, I've been thinking of these sort of flips in the magnetic field as being due to maybe some kind of an overall, like instability or overall mode, like a sausage mode or something, going along the overall structure. But it's quite possible that they're also due to small changes in the angle to the line of sight or the velocity of the jet as it goes out.
Was wondering if it was in the cases where you see the structure move along the jet, or the curve, you showed a curved path of motion that was tracked along the jet, is it clear, is the polarization moving along that path, or is it just material that's moving with the polarization pattern remaining constant? I was just wondering if it's possible to...
You're talking about when you can actually follow a component, right, and see that it's actually moving along a curved trajectory.
Right.
What we would like to be able to do is actually observe a single feature. Let me just put up a view graph so that you have some idea what we're talking about here. Okay, just here's an example, right? You've got what seems to be a curved path, and you've got the magnetic seems to be perpendicular everywhere. What you'd like to do is pick up a knot here and actually follow it as it moved out along here and see its own. Right? Now, there is hope for doing that in the future because this 2-centimeter survey, a monitoring survey that's being done with the VLBA, has recently added polarization capability. Okay? So far, it hasn't really been possible just because we haven't had enough observations to follow properly. But hopefully, that's something that will come. And another thing that will come, in fact, from this added a capability is that one of the people involved is Dan Holman, who is the circular polarization guru of the whole planet, which means that hopefully we'll start getting information about how the circular polarization of these core regions is varying with time on a timescale of a few months.
Okay, let's thank our speaker again. And now we have 1 hour for coffee, reconvening at 11:30.